It's our wide receiver prospect preview here on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. What a time to be alive. Charles McDonald joins me to preview all those prospects, but we also have to talk about big news in the NFL as Stephon Diggs was traded from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans. Before we get into the prospects, we break that all down. But man, what a great class of players we got to get into here. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze. Just how good are these top three receivers? We're going to tell you all that and more on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, April 4th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is the man himself, Charles McDonald. Charles, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much. Well, that's not true. I got a cortisone shot in my back yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't let your kids play football, but let your kids play football type situation is what I'm dealing with, so... You know, I've been pretty down bad for the past like 24 hours and probably will be for another 24 hours. But then I'll be feeling like Superman, you know, so just got to get this thing done. And the big thing that I've been thinking about over the past day or so, because this is my third one. And every time I get a shot, it puts me out of commission for a few days until you start feeling better. And it blows my mind. Like NFL players will play a game like a few hours after getting a cortisone shot. Because the doctor's instructions are specific. Hey, like if you get up and like get on a train or a plane or, you know, go to the bar and hang out with your friends and start moving around, your medicine's not going to work the way it needs to. So playing the football game, which is much more rigorous than getting on a plane or a train or going to the bar with your friends, kind of blows my mind. But here we are. It's a random place to start this. And once we get more into the show, or not more into the show, before we get into the show, I have something to ask you.
Okay,
that is so unrelated to all of this. But I remember one time back in the day, we were talking about the dinner party episode of The Office.
Yes.
It's a great episode. Have you watched the uncut versions of that on Peacock, like the extended editions?
No, I have not.
So on Peacock, they have, like, they re-released the entire show with every deleted scene put back in.
Mm.
So, you know, every episode's, you know, like 35, 40 minutes. And there is an entire plot line that's added into the dinner party episode that didn't make into the original cut that is laugh out loud hysterical. And I just remembered that I need to tell you that. So I'm going to tell you that on the show as we talk about draft wide receivers.
I mean, perfect, because now you've just given me my weekend plans, which is definitely to watch that episode. I've read like I think a Rolling Stone did like a whole profile on the episode. Or something like that. Some like big name publication did a whole profile on the episode. I've read that, so I might like know the storyline when I see it. But yeah, man. I mean, all time incredible television, The Office, the dinner party episode. This is going to be an all time podcast, buddy, because we are officially no pressure. This is going to be an all time podcast because we are officially in my wheelhouse. Okay, we did quarterbacks. That was enjoyable. We suffered through the running back episode. But Charles, today we begin to preview the wide receiver position in this year's NFL draft. We're going to cover a bunch of guys here today. We're not going to get to the entire class. This is only part one. We're going to do Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, Ladd McConkey, Brian Thomas Jr., Keon Coleman, Roman Wilson, and Ricky Pearsall. We're saving the Texas guys and a bunch of other prospects for part two. Those are not my rankings. Those are nobody's rankings. That is just a random collection of names that I've seen the most of right now. So we are talking that in the show today. But Charles, if we didn't have enough wide receiver stuff to go over, we got to talk about breaking news in the NFL that's happened since we last recorded, which is the Bills have traded wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. The Bills get back a 2025 second round pick, Minnesota Vikings second round pick that the Texans got. And then the Texans, meanwhile, they get Diggs and then two picks, a 2024 sixth rounder and a 2025 fifth rounder. What was your immediate reaction, Charles, when you saw this trade?
First was, wow, Bills totally done with Stephon.
Yeah. Talk about the intense drama and tension of the Office dinner party episode. That's what's been going on in the Buffalo Bills locker room for the last couple, like year and a half.
Yeah. I think that this was probably the logical end. I thought they were going to give it one more year due to the contract, but the Bills decided, hey, no, we're done. We're out of here. They're going to eat $31 million in dead cap this year because they decided to make this trade before June 1st, which is not an insignificant number, especially when you're dealing with a contending team who has already paid quarterback. You've paid Deion Dawkins. You've paid Von Miller. Like, you know, what the Bills have basically decided this year is we're going to take it on the chin. We're going to see how far we can get with Josh Allen. But once you kind of get through the draft and you start going through OTAs and adding your prior to UDFAs, that's basically what the Bills roster is going to be. Like, it's going to be about finished by the time you get through the draft, which is true for a lot of teams. But, you know, if you're like a novice to cap situation, then when you hear us say, the Bills are down $31 million in dead cap after the Stephon Diggs trade, that's like $31 million that you don't have access to actually improve your team. And they'll get that back next year. And we'll kind of see what happens. I think the draft pick compensation was fair. Probably not going to get a first round pick for a receiver of Stephon Diggs' age anymore. But I also think that this is a good move for the Texans too. You're kind of like in the inverse spot where the Bills are. You haven't paid your quarterback yet, and he looks to be one of like the 10 best quarterbacks, if not like 6 or 7 best quarterbacks in the league already in CJ Stroud. And I guess the way that you evaluate their part of this transaction is what you think about Stephon Diggs as a player, which I can't really get a good beat on. I still think that he's really good. I think that part of what happened last year was, you know, when you make the switch from Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady, I thought that where Ken was really strong in like building the passing game, Joe Brady, like, he came along and built a pretty damn good run game, because that's when James Cook started popping off. That's when they were one of the better rushing teams in the league. So, like, all in all, between the two offensive coordinators, you still end up having a good offense for the entire season. But the Stephon Diggs thing never really popped off with Joe Brady the way they would Dorsey. And if you go back and look at the game logs for Stephon, the start of the season, he was doing Stephon Diggs thing. Yeah, I remember going out to the game where they beat the crap out of the Dolphins. He looked just as good as ever. And now, you know, there's some doubt on where he is right now. But I'm still a fan of his game.
So a couple things. Number one, I totally agree with you that overall, this is a move I think the Bills had to make for a variety of reasons. And it's a great move for the Texans. I think it's a great trade for them. And I think we can have a discussion about how he's going to fit into a wide receiver room that has some young players that I really like. On what Stephon Diggs has left, I spent basically the entire day yesterday after writing this news up and doing a breaking news video on it. I spent the rest of the day like charting out his full reception perception sample. And let me say this. There is no like first half, second half split in terms of what he is on film. To me, he is the same player from start to finish, right? Like there's no, oh, suddenly in week 8, he's just not getting open anymore, or there's this big decline. However, like that almost actually makes it more confusing, because I think when you, even the games you look at him at the beginning of the season, he's definitely in my opinion, a step slower. The results in reception perception, it's not a significant drop off, but we're talking about a guy that went from, you know, like 99th percentile success rate versus man coverage the last 3 seasons in Buffalo, 2020 to 2022, down to like 76th, 77th percentile. So that's not like a crazy drop off, but I always say this, Charles, the thing I'm most concerned or like least confident projecting with reception perception specifically is age cliffs. Cause sometimes you see a guy take these two players, I think, provide a perfect example. Sometimes you see a guy like Allen Robinson take a little dip, and then it's like, okay, that's a little dip. Who cares? And then the next season's a disaster. You know, he can't do anything with the Rams, right? But then there's times where you see a guy like Keenan Allen take a little dip, and then he has a really one of the most productive seasons of his career in 2023, because they adjust his role, they work around that. So that's really, again, the age cliff is a hard thing to get a handle on, because it's just not a sign, like it's not a scientific thing. It's very like different player to player, but I definitely think it's inarguable that Diggs has taken a step back from a pure vertical receiver standpoint. Now, when you look at his routes, like underneath, short routes and stuff like that, he's still one of the best technicians and one of the best separators in the game, in my opinion. So I think he fits really nicely in that Houston receiver room with that in mind. But it also then makes sense beyond all the stuff off the field, Charles, where there was, again, clear tension between Diggs and team and in the locker room. It also makes sense for the Bills to say, this guy is going to want to be treated as a number one receiver on our team. And like, he's not at that level anymore. So is it just, I think it's just best to end what has been a great marriage and go our separate ways here. And he could still be a productive player for the Texans, but he wasn't, like, he was not able to be in the back half of the season what the Bills needed him to be, which is a true at full field threat number one receiver. He's like an underneath guy, but all the Bills had was underneath guys. Khalil Shakir, right. Dalton Kincaid, you know, James Cook out of the backfield. Their only vertical threat is damn Gabe Davis, and we know what the Gabe Davis experience is. So to me, after watching the film, kind of that's where I think of him as a player right now.
Yeah, I guess with Stephon, the whole thing that reception also can't chart is if they, you know, start camp or start OTAs and they say, Stephon, you're going to be like wide receiver 2A with Tank while Nico takes the big, you know, the big chunks down the field.
Yeah.
How's he going to handle that? Because I don't know about that, man. Because he might not be top dog anymore.
No, yeah. Did you see? I mean, among many of his tweets a couple of days ago, he responded to some Eagles fan who's like, come be the wide receiver 3 behind A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And he's like, who TF is a wide receiver 3, right? Like, I mean, so, but you're right that he might not be Nico Collins was better on film last year than Stephon Diggs. I mean, that's just like the reality of the situation.
Yeah. And I actually think that this is like, on paper, it looks like the perfect wide receiver group to me.
Yeah.
Like if everyone's going to mesh and get along, you know, I think that this offense should really take off from like a passing game perspective, especially, remember, you know, the whole thing is centered also around like excitement for CJ Stroud. And if he is as good as he was last season or continues to get better and he enters into like bona fide top five quarterback status this season, like they're going to tear people up on the back end. And I honestly think it could be a situation where, you know, depending on like the pass rates and the frequencies, where everyone eats, where Nico eats, where Diggs eats, where Dell eats. And, you know, it's not, you know, infinite production, like you're playing Madden or some shit like that. But still, it's a really good situation for all of them, I think, to produce. And I think you just have to see how it starts to play out once you get to training camp and once you get more reports on what these roles are going to be.
Yeah, look, this is a fantasy show, and like I know this is not going to be a popular take when I say this, but I find it wholly uninteresting and honestly like a little irritating. Like the first thing a big trade like this happens, it's like, all right, well, where are we going to rank these guys in fantasy now for the upcoming season? Like, I don't care about that because there's so many more interesting things to pull apart here. Because I'm with you that on paper, I think everybody can produce to a solid degree. Is somebody going to have like 1,400 yards in this receiver core? No, probably not. But can we get like multiple guys between 1,100 and 900 yards? And then, you know, depending on how they get that volume is kind of how that's going to come together. Because I'm with you. I think they can all eat here. And to me, like Nico Collins is an X receiver. And he's a perfect X receiver fit in this offense. Tank Dell, who is coming off a major injury, and like, I don't want to just be the guy to yada yada, like, oh, look at him, he's working out on Instagram. Okay, well, that's different than him, you know, actually playing real football games at the level that he was playing at last year before this injury. I mean, Tony Pollard broke his leg in the playoffs, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's a broken leg, no big deal. And he says to us at the Super Bowl, I wasn't really myself until like week 11. So that I'm not going to just assume Tank Dell is all the way back from week one, you know, right there in September, but he's a perfect kind of like outside inside versatility player. And Charles, it stands out to me that the Texans tried to trade for Keenan Allen. He let that slip in his introductory press conference with the Chicago Bears. And to me, when I look at Stephon Diggs' reception perception profile and like how he was performing last year, I think actually putting him in a Keenan Allen type of role where he's playing in the slot, he's running a lot of layup routes, he's a high percentage short area receiver, that's probably the best fit for him. And if you think about the Texans pass game last year, they were good on like early downs, but some of the like drop back pass game stuff, like true just let's get in the gun and spread the field, they kind of ran out of options when you have to do that. Now you might have a guy in Stephon Diggs who's like perfect for that, right? Maybe he becomes CJ Stroud's third down guy. Like, he has a high first down rate on late downs and stuff like that. I could see him filling that role. What that ends up being, like, final box score wise, again, I find that to be like kind of an uninteresting conversation, but I can see the vision where they're looking for a veteran receiver to fill in that role.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, you found out you got a quarterback. It's go time.
Yeah.
It's go time. So we'll see what happens. I'm really excited to see just what this looks like. And man, it's just kind of funny that the Texans have just been able to turn this around so fast.
Crazy.
And just what the presence of a CJ Stroud means. Because, you know, like this time last year, if you told me the Texans that we're in the headspace to make a big move for wide receiver, like, hold on, you might wanna wait there, big fella, because you don't know how things are gonna play out. But now you've seen Stroud, you've seen how good he is, and we're just gonna, you know, keep him moving and see if this offense can really take them to where they wanna be, which is Super Bowl contenders. On offense, they look ready to me to make that leap if everyone stays healthy. And then on defense, we'll see if, you know, some of the additions they made, like adding Danielle Hunter and Aziz Al-Shaahir at linebacker, will get them over the hump. And, you know, so you can actually compete with Baltimore instead of losing 34-10 in the divisional round.
Last thing on this, just Bills wide receiver room. I am probably, I'm definitely the most ahead of consensus on Curtis Samuel of anybody in the industry. I also really like Khalil Shakir as a receiver, but it's very obvious the group that they have on paper right now is not the group that they're going to walk into week one with, which obviously that transitioned us into our prospect talk here. But what's your level of concern, I guess, about the pass catching group around Josh Allen?
Oh, I mean, it should be, like, to take another office term, threat level midnight, baby. Like, this is not good. Khalil Shakir, I think he's a good receiver, but to me, you know, wide receiver is one of those positions where it's the sum of your parts. Mm-hmm. Khalil is a good receiver. Khalil as wide receiver one is not that enticing to me.
No.
And, you know, you can add in Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, but still, that's not really a scary group of pass catchers unless Dalton Kincaid hits, you know, like a Travis Kelce development arc, really. So I think that, hey, if you add someone in the first round, that probably works. But honestly, I think they're at the spot where they probably need to double up at wide receiver picks this year. And what better class to do that than this class? You know, there's been some rumblings, even if they would go up and make a trade for Marvin Harrison, would be fun. It would be a lot of fun. I say, as a fan of a team that went up and traded for Julio Jones, it was a lot of fun, but that does leave some holes in the back end of your roster because you don't have the picks to fill in. And it's not just, you know, quarterback receivers, a whole football team. So decision needs to be made, but this is a good class to have this type of problem, I'll say.
Yeah, Robert Mays and I talked about that on the last podcast. Could the Bills be kind of a, and that was before the Diggs trade, could they be that sleeping team that hops up the draft board? Like maybe to the back half of the top 10 if like Roma Dunze has fallen or something like that. I think maybe something like that, or maybe a trade up for Brian Thomas is more realistic for Buffalo. Or yeah, you're right. They stick at 28 and they pick multiple guys in the draft. That is very possible as well. But look, this is what happens when you have the elite quarterback and you're paying him a lot of money, unlike the Texans. They can spend, you know, on their credit card and like, we'll worry about paying that off in the future. Who cares? Because we got the rookie quarterback on the rookie contract quarterback. We can figure that out later. Buffalo is in a very different window where they got to get a little more creative around Josh Allen. But perfect transition into the prospects here. Like I said, we are talking about 8 receivers here today. Let's start off with Marvin Harrison Jr., who you mentioned. Charles, what is there to say about Marvin Harrison other than this guy is really, really, really good at football?
I don't know. To me, I think he's the best player in the draft. Mm-hmm. You know, in a world where the Bears didn't need a quarterback, I would have no problem taking Marvin Harrison number one overall. I think he's that good. I don't really know, you know, how to do like best prospects since AJ Green, Julio Jones, but like AJ Green is what he reminds me of when I watch him play. And, you know, I think that for Marvin, it's been kind of interesting to see where the draft process has been for him. And I think Marvin's been hit with a bit of prospect fatigue too, in the way that like Caleb Williams has or had, you know, before the Bears just kind of settled in on him being the number one pick. Where Marvin, we've known he's going to be here for, you know, over 2 years now. Because even when he was, you know, third or fourth fiddle behind some of those guys that they have in the NFL now, before he broke out with CJ Stroud and Stroud's last year, he still looked like, okay, this is a future pro. And then he gets a start. You're like, okay, wow, this is really good. But CJ Stroud's leaving. How's it going to look with Kyle McCord? The exact same. Like it looks the exact same. And Kyle, you know, to put it nicely, was testing Marvin's skills and letting him showcase all his abilities for the next level. We'll put it that way. But you know, I think when you look at Marvin, I really don't see any holes that are concerning this game. I think the speed concern is not real. Is he as fast as Malik Nabers? No, but like, who is really in this class? If I had to guess, I would still put Marvin at like a 4.38 or a 4.39 guy, because I don't really think he has that much trouble separating down the field, and he's really good in contested catches. He can go out and make layups. He can run after the catch. He can do the short game stuff. I don't know. He's amazing, and I tend to think that he is worth a trade up. Like if you're the Bills and you're like, F it, let's go do it. Let's do it. Let's go get Marvin. You at least know you would have a stud wide receiver to pair your elite quarterback for a very long time.
Oh yeah. Look, I think it's been interesting as somebody that doesn't follow college football and like, but I know who Marvin Harrison is, and I know that he has been put in this prospect level of prospect for quite some time. Right. It's been interesting to obviously follow like other people kind of saying like, hey, well, I like, you know, there's this maybe Malik Nabers is the wide receiver one for other teams, whatever. And like, I can see where they're at there because Malik Nabers brings so much explosive play ability to the table. Man, Marvin is just so clean, bro. Like he's just everything about his game is good, at least good, right? Like I think he's good after the catch. He's not a net negative after the catch. He shows you so much ability on, you said it perfectly, the layup routes where he can give you that easy separation. I mean, I've seen other people criticize like his work against press coverage or deep down the field, and I don't see that at all. Like in terms of reception perception, he's got a great success rate versus press, like right around the same neighborhood of, you know, Devontae Smith won the damn Heisman, or like Chris Olave, these kind of like technician type receivers. And he's 6'3", you know, over 200 pounds. Like he's a hulking receiver. And I mean, if we're like really nitpicking, there are sometimes in tight coverage situations where he could be a little early or the timing's a little off, stuff like that. But again, we're really nitpicking there. I have him as my number one prospect in the class in terms of wide receivers. And like I do, I like stack my draft board up from the last few classes. And like he's the top ranked receiver, at least since, you know, I think he's a better prospect than Ja'Marr Chase. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase ended up being a great player, but I even put him a little tier higher than Chase, or not a tier, but like a couple spots higher as a prospect than Ja'Marr Chase, because there's just really no holes in his game.
Yeah, I'm like, when it comes to building big boards and doing play rankings, I'm pretty old school with it. You know, I think some people will be like, oh, you know, a quarterback's got to be first because they're the quarterback, but I kind of do it. Who is better at playing their position? Mm-hmm. And rank it. I don't think anyone is as good at playing their position in this draft class as Marvin Harrison is at playing wide receiver. And that includes Caleb Williams, who I think should be a no-brainer franchise quarterback. Guys like Joe Alt, who has been deemed as a generational left tackle prospect by some people. Marvin is that good. He's a no-brainer. And the fact that he's been this good for this long with different quarterbacks in different scenarios, different situations, to me just accentuates the talent. And dude, he's going to go top four without lifting a finger the entire draft process except to get weighted at the combine. That's how good he is. Yeah. Doesn't matter if he doesn't work out.
Yeah, like that's been the funny part about some, I guess, weirdos on the internet being like, yeah, well, he didn't work out, so that's not a good sign. Yeah, he didn't work out because every team that he talked to that's in that range is like, yeah, we don't care. There's nothing we need to see. What do you need to see? Would it be fun to see Marvin Harrison run a 40? Hell yeah. That would be fun. But you know what else is fun? watching him play football. And like when you watch him play football, you know, I track double coverage for reception perception. He has a like 2x double, like two times the amount of double coverage than any of the other prospects in this class. And in terms of like his ability to beat double coverage, it's at a higher level than anybody that's been like in this range since I've been charting prospects. Like it's just, he's really a, nobody's a perfect prospect, right? But in terms of if you just carved a wide receiver prospect out of stone, it would be Marvin Harrison, because he's got A plus size. He's got elite route running ability. He's great in contested situations. And like in terms of production after the catch, like yards after catch per reception, he's up there with any of these other guys. So it's like, what are we doing here?
He checks so many boxes. I don't know. I really think it's prospect fatigue. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's like when you've dated a girl for so long, you know, this is so great, but you get a wandering eye. No, stay focused on the cause, man.
I wouldn't know anything about that. I'm not saying you would.
I'm not saying that I would either. I'm just saying stay focused on the cause. Some people, not anyone on this podcast.
No. Not producer Colin, not us. No way. We are all just, yeah, we're focused on the goal. Okay, but let's talk about Malik Nabers here, a guy that, again, is some teams wide receiver one. Some people, you know, on the internet are he's their wide receiver one, right? They're feeling great and feeling bold about it. They need to put a statement out. I've officially said Malik Nabers is my wide receiver one. Okay. I mean, that's fine. Malik Nabers is a really good prospect. So, Charles, in your opinion, what makes him such a good player that not you or I, but other folks are ready to say he is the best wide receiver in this class?
I think people like shiny things. And Malik Nabers is a very, very shiny thing. And that's, you know, to be honest, it's kind of underselling how good he is. But, you know, I think when people say, oh, why would I have him over Marvin Harrison? To me, the only real, like, logical reasoning there would be the speed. It really is game-breaking speed. You know, and we'll get to the other LSU wide receiver, Brian Thomas, too. But, you know, when you start watching LSU tape, what makes their offense so damn hard to defend is it's really hard to find, like, and especially this is true for Nabers, for like skilled wide receivers who also happen to be cracking like, you know, near 4.2 speed. Mm-hmm. And LSU had two of them. And as far as Nabers goes, I still have like some concerns just about like how often he put in the slot and some of the production that was put there. But still, it's hard to turn your nose at anyone who at a play's notice can turn, you know, a 10-yard gain into a 30-yard gain. Or a 30-yard gain into a 60-yard gain. And those are the kind of game breakers that NFL teams are looking for. And I think that, you know, with his speed, the physicality, some of the route running nuances he's had, his floor is pretty high as he still, you know, tries to learn some of the more finer nuances on the game that might help him survive a little bit better as an outside cornerback, or not cornerback, outside wide receiver against some of these bigger and tougher, faster cornerbacks in the NFL. But, you know, if you can't get Marv, you know, getting Nabers or doing so we'll get to in a few minutes is not a bad consolation prize at all to me. You know, I just think that there are, you know, some refinements in this game that aren't there yet to me that put him just below Marv.
Yeah, I think he's the least refined of these three prospects.
Yes, for sure.
That being said, he's also the youngest, which doesn't, I mean, he's like 20 years old. It's crazy. That doesn't just guarantee, oh, he's younger, he'll develop, he'll get better. That's not really how it works. But you could put that in his favor. He's definitely the most explosive. I mean, people love explosive plays, as they should. And for certain offenses, if you want, like, it depends on what you want as an offense, because if you want just a true X receiver, like the typical, you mentioned AJ Green, just like the classic number one, you know, I could put him on the backside. He can line up against press man coverage every single snap and, you know, run these like high degree of difficulty vertical routes. But, like, Malik Nabers didn't do that in college. I think he shows the ability to beat press man coverage at a pretty high level. And especially as he develops and he gets more of that refinement, I think he can catch up to being that receiver. But if you're an offense, it's weird because I keep coming back to the Giants. I think they need a real boundary receiver. Like, I think they need an X, but at the same time, with the way their offense works and who their quarterback is, it feels like you'd kind of want a guy that, like, hey, Danny Dimes, just throw it to him. Just that's your first read. Get the ball in his hands and let him do stuff with it. I can kind of see that. So, like, I can get myself in a position where, and my overall mission statement for these three guys is they're all tier one prospects to me. They're all close enough that if you like the other guy better, I'm not going to spend 10 tweets arguing with you about it because that's a waste of everybody's time. So I can get myself at the space where people like Malik Nabers better than Marvin Harrison or Roma Dunze just because he's so explosive and maybe there's another level of development there. But there's so much to like about his prospect profile that he has that kind of game-breaking yak ability while also showing real signs of being an actual, like, real WR receiver.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit back and argue with people who say Nabers, Harrison, but I might mute you on Twitter. Just for a little bit. Yeah. Oh my God, come on. You're being a hipster right now. He's a great player, but there's one Marv.
Yeah, I think that Nabers does really fit with today's NFL, just with, you know, yak heavy, layup targets, stuff like that. So I also think that there's a little bit of shiny toy syndrome in that as well, that we tend to overrate yak plays when, like, the vast majority of NFL receiver play is, can you get open against the guy across you, or can you read this coverage well and present a reliable target to your quarterback? And, like, Nabers does that a decent, like, he does that at a really high level, but I think Marvin Harrison and to be honest with you, I think Roma Dunze, those guys do that a little bit better than Malik Nabers does right now. Like, that's, again, not me saying anything bad about Malik Nabers. I compare him to, like, Garrett Wilson in that draft class, who you could argue has been the best receiver out of that 22 class when we're comparing him against Chris Olave and Drake London. But he was definitely the most, like, wild horse route runner, big play kind of guy in his ball, get the ball in his hands type of situation. So I think if you like Malik Nabers, that's perfectly fine with me. I think he's a really, really good receiver prospect, the tier one receiver prospect.
Mm-hmm. I think there's three tier one guys and then a drop off, like Marv, Nabers, Adunze, tier drop off.
So let's get into Roma Dunze here, because the one thing I will argue with people about, I'm not going to spend 10 tweets arguing with people about it because that is a collective waste of all of our time. But when people say, like, it's Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, teardrop Roma Dunze, I don't agree with that at all. And it's crazy because, Charles, like, in the dynasty fantasy football community, that seems to be the consensus, is that because he's a four-year player and, you know, different production models and stuff like that. And people that do that, they do great work and it's valuable stuff. But because of that, there seems to be this idea that, like, Adunze is not in Nabers or Harrison's tier, or, like, that he's kind of overrated as a prospect. But it's crazy, though, man, because everybody I talk to that watches players, everybody I trust that watches players, puts him in this group of players, including me. Like, I honestly struggled a little bit weighing Marvin Harrison and Roma Dunze's, like, reception perception profile back and forth, because, like, Adunze's really, really good. And if Harrison didn't exist, he would be my number one receiver in this class. Same. And, like, that's how high I view him. I just think he, again, a lot of what we talk about with Marvin Harrison, true X that really, to me, doesn't have any holes in his game.
Dude, Rome is crazy. And I mean, I think Rome is good to the point where it's almost got me, like, looking at, like, some of the panics hype. I'm like, dude, he was made to, I think, a pretty large degree by how damn good Roma Dunze is. Because one of the craziest things to me about Adunze, and I don't know how crazy this sounds, but, you know, he kind of reminds me of, like, Larry Fitzgerald to a degree, where it's like the ability to track the ball deep down the field in horrific circumstances where, you know, you got two bodies on him and he's finding the ball and he's plucking it out the air and coming down with it and, you know, giving himself a chance to, you know, maybe not the biggest yak threat, but still, like, to be someone that can, you know, be a monster just when it comes to getting open, getting the ball, tracking the ball, and finally bringing it in downfield. And what to me is, like, the coolest thing about Adunze is you get to some of these college offenses that are just, like, collective talents where you have Penix, draft prospect, Troy Fatanu, he's an offensive lineman, draft prospect. Polk, McMillan, both the other two wide receivers, both draft prospects. Rome is the best one, clearly.
By a lot.
By a lot. That's just getting that offense and driving it where it needs to go. So, man, I am such a big fan of his game. To me, I think the floor on Romo Dunes is still probably a low end wide receiver one. Like, his worst case outcome to me is someone who probably starts for a pretty long time in the NFL. And at best case, he turns into one of the more dynamic weapons in the league. To me, his game just seems so pro ready. Mm-hmm. From the size, the speed is good enough, and just the route running technicalities. I think he's just so clean, so polished that it's hard for me to see a spot where he actually fails and doesn't live up to what he's supposed to be. So I'm all the way in on O'Dunes. I didn't watch too much of him during the season because, Pac-12, they like to hide what they're doing. But whenever he's in a situation where he got to play on a bigger stage, like a couple games versus Oregon and in the playoffs, you just get to see just a special, special player. And I would be thrilled to get my hands on him if I was an NFL team. Like, even in a scenario where, let's say, Bears go Caleb 1, Commanders go a quarterback at 2, and the Patriots don't like the options at 3, so they take Marvin Harrison at 3. If I'm the Cardinals and I can take Romo Dunes at 4, I still feel pretty fine about that. I think he's that good, and I think he's going to be a monster in the NFL.
Okay. So many threads to pull on there. First of all, you are with, I don't see any of the separation concerns that other people have, or his ability to get open. I mean, he makes a lot of contested catches because he is great at those contested catches. His quarterback throws him into some of those contested catches, as you mentioned with Michael Penix. And it feels like we have a receiver every few years. We're guy had a lot of contested catches in college. All of his highlights, you see him make a lot of contested catches. He must not be able to get open. And it's what are we talking about here? Actually watch the routes and how they develop. That is not a wide receiver situation. It's he's a great route runner. He gets open on all the routes. The technique is there. I think the explosiveness is there. But the immediate pushback, and you mentioned the Pac-12, that I always get is you can't compare Romo Dunes in the Pac-12 to Marvin Harrison in the Big 12 or Malik Nabers in the SEC. I'm listen, man, I get it. There is deep, and you can feel free to push back on me if you think I'm wrong about this. But to me, I'm listen, I watch the film on these players. I get it. The defensive reputation in the Pac-12 is not what there is in the SEC. There's a lot of corners in the SEC, man. They're
hell yeah.
What are we talking about? It's not just everybody from the, definitely more players get drafted on defense in the SEC. I understand that, but there are some bad players on that film as well. It's just not every corner in the SEC is better. So therefore nothing that happens in the Pac-12 matters.
Yeah. The Pac-12 was probably the best conference in football last year, just on a whole, based on how many teams they had ranked. So, when I was younger, I used to be a big SEC homer. And then, you get older and I started actually working in football and watching more of these games. I'm like, man, there's Georgia, there's Alabama, there's LSU, Florida used to be a thing. But the rest of the conference is not that distinguishable from any other, Power Five conference. Tennessee, what they've been over the past few years, they're a good, last year's Pac-12 season had a good chunk of teams better than your mid-tier SEC team. So, Rome's battle tested, and you get to go play Michigan, you get to go play Texas, and even in the Michigan game, it wasn't clean for Penix, and Penix played a pretty terrible game. But I think if you go back, you watch the film, Rome's still doing his thing out there.
Oh yeah,
and for people who aren't aware, looking forward to the 2025 draft. Michigan has a cornerback, Will Johnson, who could probably sit out this season and probably go top five next year. And I thought Rome held his own against him. So I think the any concerns you have against Rome and Pac-12 conference versus Nabers and SEC, it's 2024. Come join us. This all has been nuked. It's not the same as it used to be anymore.
Right. So These guys transfer all over the place at this point. What are we doing here? Yeah, I'm with you. The Michigan film was one of my favorites from Rome. like personally as a route runner and as a separator, but there was some chaos up front. There was some Penix chaos that you didn't really get to see that manifest. And he still had like 80 something yards, I think, in that game. So it wasn't as he was just blacked out, shut out of that game, you know? So I love him. I rank him a little higher than Malik Nabers, just, and that's just like personal preference of players. You like Malik Nabers better than Roma Dunze? I don't care. I'm not going to argue with you. But yeah, to me, he is, he's a really good prospect, man. I think I'm with you that the floor is very high on him. I'm doing these like comparison prospect videos for Yahoo. I'm shooting those later this week. My like kind of realistic, sober prospect comparison for Roma Dunze is like Allen Robinson, like route runner, contested catch, X receiver. My ceiling comp for him is Davante Adams. Like I think you mentioned Larry Fitzgerald. I can see that as well, 100%. I just have more like banked in the memory of Davante Adams, guy that gets open, guy that makes plays after the catch, even if he's not like Deebo Samuel, Malik Nabers after the catch. He's a tackle breaker after the catch, and he can win 50-50 balls down the field. Like I think the ceiling for Roma Dunze is a guy that you throw the ball to 30% of the time as an offense, like the Packers did with Davante Adams, and you don't think twice about it.
Yep. I'm all in. And you know, this top three of the class, like I'd still have Marv first, I go Rome second, Nabers third, but you know, it would be hard to, if you end up with any of the three and you need a receiver, it'll be hard to feel bad about that. Or even if you're just, you know, you're sitting at the board and maybe you're looking at, okay, we don't need a wide receiver, but Rome is so much better than anyone else we have on our roster. Or not on our roster, but on our draft board, then you probably just still pull the trigger. Like we were in the mock draft that Nate Tyson and I did the other day, we kind of got to a point where Romo Dunze was still on the board at 8 for the Falcons. It's like, hey, yeah, we got Drake, we got Kyle Pitts, but what if we had Romo Dunze too? And you know, how much better is he than the next player at a position of need? I think that could be interesting for his own draft prospects, because he really is that special of a player that might make you, you know, overinvest your wide receiver spot just to get him on your roster.
Yeah. Imagine if the Bills did trade up to like the back half of the top 10 if Roma Dunze was there. That would be, I mean, that's, I'll be partying like for 5 days after the draft if that's the case.
Especially Josh Allen.
Yeah, he definitely will be partying. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to speed through the rest of these receivers that we got to talk about today right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk Brian Thomas Jr., the other LSU receiver. So when you sit here and you kind of view this class as a whole, Charles, the top three, I think, lives up to the hype to me. What's your level of confidence with the rest of this class as like clear-cut first-round players, starting with Brian Thomas out of LSU? Oh,
clear-cut first-round players? I don't know. But I would say like we're not hitting the Texas guys today. We're looking at like Brian Thomas, Lab Conkey, Keon Coleman, Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall. I would probably put Brian Thomas as like the guy I would feel most comfortable taking in the first round. Even him, I feel like to a degree, some of his game is just like an idea, you know? And I feel like this comp has been thrown around a lot because, you know, I think as we lean more into Gen Z and their brethren just being absolute freakazoids when it comes to combine testing and stuff, the Martavis Bryant tier of receiver becomes a little bit more common.
I think I've thrown a Martavis Bryant comp out like each of the last three classes.
Yes.
And so far it's actually not gone well because it's been like Christian Watson and Quentin Johnston. But I do think, to me, Brian Thomas is a more actualized version of that archetype than those two guys were.
Agreed. Cause dude, Brian, he's got real deal speed.
Yeah.
Insane speed. Like, there's some plays where, or the one of the plays that sticked out to me is I don't remember which team LSU was playing, but like he's running down the field and he's got two DBs like bracketed over top of him. He splits both of them. And he runs like so deep into the end zone that he actually has to come back to the ball that Jaden, because he literally outthrew like a wide open, like he outthrew himself pretty much. But that's the kind of speed that we're talking about. And that's the kind of speed at that size, you know, round 6'4", that's going to get you drafted. Now, the reason he's not in that top 10 tier, like the measurables might make you think, is because there's some polish that still needs to happen within his own game. I think he's a little bit landing spot dependent as far as that development goes. But, you know, I do think he's not in the same class as the guys up top. But if I had to pick, you know, a guy I feel most comfortable taking the first round, based on the size, speed, production, he'd probably be up on that list. And I think he needs to kind of walk into a situation where if Brian Thomas were to be your wide receiver one next season, that might not be good for his development pattern. But if he can be a wide receiver two and have the opportunity to make mistakes while an offense can still stay afloat and you still get to bank on some of that explosive ability, that would be a good landing spot for him. I can't think of like a specific team right now. I really would have liked to see him with the Texans before they made the Stephon Diggs trade, just so you could have another burner down the field. But now he's going to have to find a spot where maybe he might be thrust into a pretty big role in year one, and we'll see how that has to play out for him.
I think there are still several teams that could end up taking him where he wouldn't necessarily be asked to be that wide receiver one. I think we kind of view him similarly, where again, to me, he's that actualized version of the Martavis Bryant archetype. He's definitely better than, I think he's a better prospect than Quentin Johnston or Christian Watson, those same type of guys before. He really only runs like three routes. Almost 70% of the routes I charted for him were nine route, slant route, curl route. That was it. And he's really good on those routes. And he's actually, he shows some development, some potential to develop into a good route runner. And he's good after the catch, and he's good in contested situations, but that is a projection in terms of him being, like you said, a true number one receiver that runs the full route tree. That is a projection. I think he shows you the tools to say that he can get there, but we might be looking at like a DK Metcalf type of early career where he's only playing on one side of the field and we're only asking him to run a handful of routes. And then as he grows and develops, maybe he can become a, less freaky, but still freaky in his own right, version of DK Metcalf. But I do look at teams, like the Colts at 15, the Jags at 17, the Bengals at 18. Like, I definitely think all those teams are going to be in the market for a receiver, and he could drop on, like, the Colts to me make so much sense. I don't know if they do it or not, but just you're basically taking Alec Pierce out and putting Brian Thomas in, like a faster, better separation X receiver. That's what that offense really needs to go along with Michael Pittman and Josh Downs. So, and same in Jacksonville, really. You have Christian Kirk, but what's the point of signing Gabe Davis? The Gabe Davis thing aside, I don't even know what to say about that. But there are spots, I think, where he could land, because I'm with you. He might top out as being a volatile number two type of receiver, but I think that's okay to take that in the first round in today's NFL.
Yeah, for sure. Especially if you're going to be like a higher volume passing team. A landing spot that I kind of like from is Pittsburgh, where, George, here's the target vacuum you've always wanted. And you have, a realish quarterback, much more real than you had before throwing you the ball. But I think after the Deontay Johnson trade, their wide receiver is looking pretty damn thin.
Rough.
Yeah. So I think wide receiver is on the table for them. And hey, they've had a pretty good track record at drafting guys and developing them into being, capable from anywhere from like capable starters to Hall of Fame caliber players that end up, taking their clothes off in the middle of a game on their third team. But but still, the Steelers track record at developing wide receivers is pretty good. And it's hard to find someone with a better mold to try and figure that out than Brian Thomas.
I mean, just go Route City there with George Pickens and Brian Thomas.
And Russell Wilson, bombs away.
Bombs away. Now, that would be a pretty fun offense to watch. I would actually think, the Bills as a trade-up team would make sense for Brian Thomas, although he probably has to inherit a lot more volume there. As much as I like Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, that's a complementary skill set, but we'll see. I actually think his floor might be Dallas at 24, because I think they need an X receiver. They need a vertical player to give them what Michael Gallup did not give them. I actually kind of think that would make sense as a floor for him. But all right, I think we view Brian Thomas the same way. He's going to be very interesting in terms of landing spot. Let's talk about the next guy here, Ladd McConkey. Charles, white guy. But
go Dogs.
Go Dogs for you. He's a white guy, but he's not the gritty lunch pail, first guy in, last guy out slot receiver This guy is like, he could play outside and really burn you deep. Like, I know the first thing people want to do is you know, small white guy, you got to compare him to Wes Welker, but that's really not how he plays.
No, and I'm so glad that we're finally here where Ladd is walking into the NFL, because he was like a walk-on at Georgia, and he got on the field as a freshman, you know, freshman walk-on. Those two guys usually just get a degree and go sell, you know, open a car dealership somewhere in Athens and, you know, rake that money for the rest of life. But he gets on the field and I'm like, oh, like, this is an NFL player right here. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you kind of slipped through the cracks and ended up in this spot. But, you know, he's a real playmaker. And even when they had guys like Brock Bowers and A.D. Mitchell on the same team, and you've got a good running game, you've got guys that are going to the NFL, they still really tried to get Ladd the ball. Like, that was still a pretty important piece of their offense. And, you know, like you said, he's different. He's not like this. He's not just like some quick, shifty slot guy. Like, no, he's got real speed down the field. They asked him to do a lot of things on the outside. At times, they leaned on Brock Bowers to take on some of the easy stuff, which is why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do that with Brock Bowers? Like, he's really that good. So Ladd had to do some of the harder roles that maybe translate better for NFL tape. And now, you know, we're here at a point where I think first round is still a little harsh for me to conceptualize. But as like a player who can come in and be a real piece to a wide receiver room early on, as he, you know, hopefully stays a little more healthy in the NFL than he did in college, is a pretty good sweet spot for him. The only really concerns that I have for him is just, you know, what's the amount of volume that his body can take? Because, like I said, he was pretty banged up in college at times, and he is a smaller receiver. But, you know, it's the speed, it's the instincts on what he can do with the ball in his hands. I thought, you know, even when times when Georgia got tricky with him, using him as like a reverse player or on jet sweeps and stuff like that, or screens, if he gets the ball in his hands, like, the vision's pretty good, the speed's pretty good. It's just, you know, it comes in a bit of a smaller size and you have to figure out how to weigh that.
Yeah, definitely injury concerns. There's no question about that. I really love, I mean, he might be the best out route runner in the class. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's crazy. He looks like a pro receiver running like out breaking routes, and from the outside too, against man coverage. Now, he does have issues with press. He does have issues sometimes in contested situations. So, like, He's not going to be this prototypical X receiver, but I kind of think of it as like a Tyler Lockett type of player that you can get his speed going
and
his route running ability in the slot, but he can play outside as well because he can legit beat man coverage. Now, I think Tyler Lockett, I'm a big Tyler Lockett fan. I think that's like a really high comparison. But at the same time, if he continues to develop as a route runner and can stay healthy, that makes a lot of sense to me. And like, Ladd sneaks up on you after the catch, man. I'm not saying he's sneaky athletic because he's white, but he sneaks up on you.
You know, it's kind of hard to say sneaky when you run the 4.3.
Right. But like, I just think there are times where like he breaks more tackles than you'd expect. Like with his frame, that's what I mean by it, because he really makes a lot of those plays like as a true tackle breaker, which you wouldn't ascribe with Tyler Lockett at this point in his career. But Tyler Lockett used to be like a high end kick returner, which is why I think that makes sense for Ladd as well.
Yeah, Ladd can do a whole lot of things in the football field. I really am just interested to see what the landing spot is for him, because, you know, like, if the Bills were to take him at 28, I don't think that would be a great spot for him. But even go to a room that already has a dude, like, before the Stephon Diggs trade, I had been mocking Ladd McConkey to the Texans at 42. Just because, you know, you already got Nico Collins, you already got Tank Dell. That's not really a bad landing spot for him. But, you know, we're just going to have to see where it goes. Because, like I said, I don't think he's a guy that will be, you know, a 120 target guy over the course of a season. Probably not. Or, you know, into that wide receiver one territory. But still a very useful player you'd like to have on your team. And I think his landing spot will really determine how things play out from early on in his career.
Yeah, people want to really mock him to 33 with the Carolina Panthers. That feels like we're really overlapping with Deontay Johnson.
That's way too small.
Yeah, it's a lot of small guys there. I mean, that's a tiny offense right there in Carolina if you add him.
You can't roll out Adam Thielen, Deontay Johnson, Ladd McConkey. I don't know. I think that's – I'm just going to press you into the stands.
Right. I was going to say, Deontay can beat press, but like,
yeah,
you ideally want him off the ball. And even their second round pick last year, Jonathan Mingo is a guy that I thought needed to play big slot. And like, yeah, you have nobody to work on the outside.
We're just going to hit the shit out of you and see what happens.
Don't worry. At least your quarterback's a big intimidating figure that takes up a lot of room. I do think like if a team took him at the end of the first round, I probably wouldn't kill him for it, but I think he's more like an early second round pick as Ladd McConkey, but a player that I really, really like. I mentioned big receiver that I think needs to play in the slot. To me, that's Keon Coleman. I'm really interested to hear what you think about Keon Coleman, because I am not going to bore the listeners of this podcast with my long data spiel on guys who don't get separation in reception perception, like as collegiate prospects. But if you want to, you can go listen to Reception Perception or you could subscribe to the site and you can get all that data and stuff. I'm not going to bore Charles with the 20 minute spiel on it, but basically like if you don't separate in college, you either don't work out or you're like Will Fuller, you're a volatile deep threat, DJ Chark type player, or you transition into a big slot receiver role, you know, like a Rashee Rice type of guy from last year. So that to me is the only way I can see Keon Coleman working. And there are plenty of players that have done that, right? Like Amon-Ra St. Brown, another guy that fits into this archetype. But at the same time, the risk with this is that you see a guy that's, big outside receiver, coaching staff thinks he should play outside, and we are going to throw him contested catches. And then you get Treylon Burks, you get Jonathan Mingo. So there is risk to that archetype player. So that's kind of where I stand with Keon Coleman. Where do you stand, Charles?
Oh, I'm still torn because, like, I watched him so much during the season, and you know, I'm not watching like with as critical an eye, but man, I was so impressed with like, you know, with what he was able to put together last season. And it probably just comes from, hey, even a second round NFL prospect is going to make most college players look absolutely silly.
Yeah.
But, you know, first of all, I think Jordan Travis is not an NFL prospect at quarterback.
Erratic with a capital erratic, E.
Yeah, erratic to say the least. So, you know, I thought that Keon and Johnny Wilson, to a degree, you know, I thought they both did a good job, like kind of mitigating some of the throws that he would make. But then you get to the draft, or you get to the combine, and it's a 4.6, and it kind of makes you go back and say, okay, maybe that 4.6 does kind of show up on there, but I still think there's a lot of things he does well. Like, I think the big slot role would be a good spot for him. And even if he doesn't get like the best separation, I still just think he's a really good football player. Mm-hmm. And I just have trouble parsing like what to do with the lack of speed and what he's good at and how it doesn't have a huge track record of like high end success in the NFL. While also thinking that he's still a good football player and think that he still has a lot of value that he can add to an offense in the right spot. Now, I've obviously cooled off on him because when I was watching during the season, I was like, this looks like a top 15 pick to me. And I would be surprised if he ends up going that high. I think his ceiling might be like Buffalo at 28 might be like his ceiling at this point. Like that range of picks. But still, I'm a fan of the game. It's just got to be at the right price now, knowing what we know more about him after this draft season.
Yeah, I think I will know so much more about how I feel about how he's going to do in the NFL when I know what team he lands on. Like, I think if he lands the Rams, like we've seen them do this before. We've seen them take a receiver like Cooper Kupp and put him in a role that is very power slot oriented, right? So I think the Bengals are a perfect team for him, where you're looking for more receivers. You lost Tyler Boyd as a slot. You could stick him in there, and like you got a quarterback that's going to be aggressive with those tighter windows. They're just like, if you're going to line that guy up on the outside and he's not going to beat press man coverage consistently, you're going to ask for high degree of difficulty throws, and not every quarterback is going to certainly take those effectively. And some quarterbacks just aren't going to take those throws, period. But I'm with you. Like, overall, while I have legit questions about his separation ability and his ability to run routes, like he runs well against zone coverage. He knows how to get himself open underneath, especially on in-breaking routes. Like, his slant routes are pretty solid against zone coverage, crossing routes, dig routes, stuff like that. It just translates so cleanly into that power slot role. I don't want to get, like, hung up on that, but to me, that would be the best way to get the best out of Keon Coleman. Let's talk about Roman Wilson here. Probably my least favorite, the least favorite of the guys we're going to talk about today for me. Small receiver that gets really, he's a senior. Is he a Senior Bowl merchant, Roman Wilson? Because that was like the
dude. I don't know. Like, to me, I know we talked about this last week, but like, you look at the pipeline of Michigan receivers into the NFL. Harbaugh doesn't give a crap about having like super dynamic guys out there. And I think that Roman Wilson just is like in the next line of, you remember like Ronnie Bell had some hype last year or the year before. Diamond Peoples-Jones, it's like,
oh yeah,
these guys are okay. They're okay, but they're not, you know, big, you know, they don't move me. Like the Roman Wilson stuff, we were talking before the show. I watched him a little bit before, you know, while I was watching JJ McCarthy and some of the other Michigan guys, and it's like, this to me is like a wide receiver three at best in the NFL. Yeah.
That's kind of where I come down with him, is I think he is going to end up being a wide receiver three. At least he should. Like, he's not a guy that you're throwing the ball to, you know, 10 times a game for the most part. He does have legit speed, and against certain looks he can get open. But he's not a guy that's going to beat press. He's not a guy like I don't think you can line him up outside. Like, I think you can line Ladd McConkey up outside. Roman Wilson's going to get swallowed up. He can make some nice catches downfield. There's no question about that. Like, I think there is a place for him on an NFL roster, and I could see him developing into a nice wide receiver three, but that's kind of the ceiling to me. To be honest with you, Charles, like, charting Roman Wilson made me like JJ McCarthy more, because there are, that sounds so disrespectful. There are some times where part of me is like, I don't know if I'm charting that as open for Roman Wilson against zone coverage specifically, because the window is like this small on these like in-breaking routes. And JJ rips that throw over the middle, like in a tight window against zone coverage. It's a very small handful of plays. But, you know, that's the deal with these Michigan passing game players. It's a very small handful of plays. But yeah, that exercise of seeing Roman Wilson actually made me like JJ McCarthy a little bit more, and like see the vision with him.
Yeah. I don't know. It just wasn't all that impressive to me. And I've seen that, I've seen people get pretty high on Roman Wilson, but I don't know. He would just need such a precise role and maybe several big brothers on offense, like in terms of on-field production to kind of make that work. I don't know. Like, Roman Wilson to me just seems like a guy you can find any year, and
yeah,
doesn't really make him all that special.
Yeah, I think he's
that
like a
sounds so mean.
It does sound mean, but I and that was kind of my worry about grouping him with these guys, because I've seen him the most, but of some of the other players. But yeah, he's not in this caliber of player to me. He's a guy that I think should go on day three and can find a nice NFL role, but definitely, like, when people were talking about him, oh man, he's just routing everybody up at the Senior Bowl. I'm like, well, you don't really see that on film, man. I mean, you just don't. But a couple other guys that shine at the Senior Bowl, you do see that with, including this last guy, Ricky Pearsall. How do you feel about Ricky Pearsall, man? Because I'm a big fan.
I don't know what happened. Like, okay. And I mean, it's in a positive way. Okay. I mean, it's in a very positive way. I don't know what the hell happened to him, because, you know, I'll be the first person to say, once Anthony Richardson left Florida, I had zero interest in watching that program. Because, you know, when I went back and I watched Anthony Richardson tape, I was like, oh my God, like, the guys he's playing with are so bad. It's like, you had a couple offensive linemen. I don't want to say like the whole situation was garbage. You had a couple offensive linemen, but the guys he was throwing the ball to were just not impressive, not good. And Ricky Pearsall was one of those guys. So when we get to the draft process this year, and you know, we're starting to collect guys, starting to collect names and watch lists and stuff like that, yeah, I'm getting people, you know, you got to check out Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I was like, I've already seen Ricky play. I'm super good on that. It's like you're walking around with a grease on your hands half the time. Just like, super good. And then I gave it a chance this year because I didn't watch Florida during the season, except for the first game they played, I think, against Utah, where it just looked like it was going to be a terrible season for them. And he's high key, a completely different player than he was the year before. You know, I still think that there's some boom or bust to his game, but sure. He has capitalized more on the boom scenarios and not turning them into, you know, mistakes or turnovers or sloppy plays like he was in 2022 when he had a top five pick throwing him the ball. I guess, I don't know what happened there. Graham Mertz, I guess, was able to get the best out of him, or maybe he just needed one more season to kind of become the best version of himself. So I think he's put himself as like a real candidate to be picked on day two of the draft and someone who I imagine would have some teams excited. Like, hey, if we're a team that likes Brian Thomas in late round one and we can't get our hands on him, what if we flip back and got Ricky Pearsall, you know, at some point on day two? Because I do think, you know, when you look at the spot, the size, the athleticism, some of the speed to get downfield, it's pretty enticing. It's like somewhat of a big play threat in the NFL, but I still am a little weary or a little, you know, weary at like, it wasn't really clicking for him until this year.
Yeah.
And how much of that is just him being like older than a bunch of players he's going against. But I also do think he's legitimately a better player than he was when he was playing with Anthony Richardson the year before.
Yeah, that is fair. The breakout part of it, like we're looking at a little bit of a later breakout type of player. I don't know how old is he right now?
He just finished his fifth year in college because he was at Arizona State before Florida.
Right. So he's 23. He'll turn 24 in September. So I mean, definitely, yeah, he's an older player for sure. But good player, man. I mean, in this past year, like he gets open. I mean, he beats man coverage, zone coverage. Like he's definitely not like a straight gonna stack you up go route runner type of player, but he can get open down the field. He can get open in the short and underneath intermediate areas. I really like his profile overall. I think, and it's funny, the thing about the hands, like this year he had great hands, man. He was just like snagging everything, off target throws. Quarterback play was a little up and down. He's a guy that's going to go on day two. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like Jaden Reed last year, where just good football player. He could win in a variety of different ways. I know JJ Zacharyson made that comparison from a statistical perspective, actually, on this podcast and in his draft guide a couple of months ago. So that is interesting to me. That could be a guy that goes higher than we think. Like he's a player that would fit really nicely as a third receiver to start, that maybe could grow into a second receiver role, or maybe even by the end of his rookie year, like Jaden Reed, like, oh, we're trying to find ways to get this guy the ball. I think he's not quite as explosive after the catch necessarily as Jaden Reed, but from a route running perspective, some similarities there to me.
Yeah. It's just, sometimes I struggle with like preconceived notions that I already have of player in my head. And I spent, because the Anthony Richardson evaluation was so interesting to me, because so much of it was predicated on his receivers just not being good enough for what they need to do. And, you know, maybe this is what it's going to be for Ricky Pearsall moving forward, where he's 2023 instead of 2022 and 2021. But like you said, I think you put it perfectly. Wide receiver three to start off. Find a team where he's got the guys that he can lean on and get moving in that direction, so that he doesn't have to hold the big brunt. Because I do think there's still a lot of upside to tap into there. It just might be a little difficult for him at the start, because, you know, I mean, we're not talking about him as a first round guy. So no. You know, he's got some flaws, but his skills and his positives are still, I would say, pretty big positive for an NFL group. Like I kind of think that, you know, if you're a team like the Falcons, because like they're still trying to add some, you know, a third wide receiver probably, or just looking at how they're building their wide receiver room, they probably need another like young draft pick contract to add to that room. You've got Drake London, you've got Darnell Mooney. I think, you know, Pearsall could be, you know, a wide receiver three that fits and it lets you use Rondell more as like a gadget
fake receiver.
As he's suited for.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me because Pearsall can give you some inside-outside versatility, which I think is what you want with Darnell Mooney, too. I have, in a piece we did for Yahoo, group piece, so I don't even know how to find it. I think I send him to the Eagles as like a third receiver that if, hey, anything happened contract-wise where you get into a squeeze with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, maybe he's your wide receiver, too, if one of those guys has to move on in a few years after developing him, like pick 53 or pick 50. They have two picks in the second round. I could see that being an area that they target because you just can't – if you're the Eagles, you got a great duo. But like enough already with Quez Watkins or the ghost of Julio Jones, like signing him off the street and like every couple games, like, oh, yeah, Julio Jones on the Eagles. That's a forgot about that. So, yeah, I think a third threat for that might be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Eagles would be a fun landing spot for him. I think that would be a great landing spot for him, honestly. Yeah, it's just, you know, like Ricky Pearsall to me, that's a price. A price thing, you know. If someone's going to take him top of the second, I probably go ugh. But at third round, fourth round, I'm all the way in.
I think I like him a little bit more than you, but I don't have the same like preconceived notion. I remember watching him with Anthony Richardson last year, but not like studying him in depth. But I really like what I saw this past year. But hey, Charles, we did it. Hell of a wide receiver pod. We got to talk about a ton of great players at the position. And the crazy part about this draft class, Charles, is we have a ton to talk about next week as well.
We sure do. Yeah, we didn't even get to the Texas guys. We didn't get to Xavier Leggett. I'm trying to think. Like, there's definitely other guys that there's still, you know, a couple more Washington guys you can get to. Troy Franklin from Oregon, like
Javon Baker. I mean, Malachi yeah. Corley. You know, there's
Tez Malik Walker. Walsh. If you're into that kind of thing, I don't know, but
I'm not. But yeah, okay.
There's a whole lot going on here. Yeah,
we might have to like 10 guys to talk about next week, which means I have a lot of charting and film work to do until then. But Charles, appreciate it. Tell the people what you got going on that they need to check out this week as we just, you know, just cram in so much draft content.
Me and Nate Tice, we just dropped a mock draft. Getting a little stuff from people on the internet because, you know, some may say that we forgot to put Dallas Turner in the first round of our mock draft. Others like me might say, hey, well, you never know when someone will drop out of the first round. So it's hard to say who's right. You or me. We'll go ahead toe-to-toe on April 25th. Where I won't be remembering this mock draft at all. We have mock draft coming out. I dropped my 11, you know, favorite players in the draft. Nate is doing a bunch of big board stuff. We got podcasts. We got this show. It's a ton of draft content that we have coming out the way. Just stay up on Yahoo Sports, you know, between fantasy and what we do on the reporting side. There's so much going on that, basically anything you're looking for, from fantasy impact to player breakdowns to mock drafts to reporting to what teams are thinking about, we got you covered on everything over here.
Look at that company, man.
That's right.
This guy. That's right. Loves
Yahoo. I want to be here next year, man. I'm trying to get that trip to New Orleans for the Super Bowl.
Hey, you and me both. I think we talked about it in Vegas where, you know, I tried to be on my best behavior from a diet perspective in Vegas. Next year, I'm telling my trainer, hey, lose my number. Bro, don't.
Literally starting now. I'm starting now so yeah. I can pig out. Yeah.
Yeah, that is what is on the brain. Hey, just like the players, we're working in the offseason so that we can get to the main thing, which is New Orleans, the Super Bowl.
The very last game of the season that hasn't been played yet.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, that is going to do it for this show. Appreciate y'all for listening. If you're loving what we're doing on the feed, leave us a rating and review. I never ask for rating and reviews, but it'd be awesome if you guys left us a rating and review. Five stars only if you're leaving a rating and review. We have reviews from like 8 years ago, like a bunch of people who don't even work for the company anymore. I'm getting banged for them on the podcast feed. Give me a break. Give us some good rating and reviews if you like what we're doing here leading up to draft season. And how can you not? Because we're producing great programs. Like, we've got one on Monday coming up with Pro Football Focus's Trevor Sikkema for our latest and next installment of Mock Draft Mondays. That's going to be electric. Until then, we're out.